Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The Milwaukee Bucks have the best record in the NBA, you know, by like percentage points or whatever, but it's still true. And they are a first place team heading on a 5-game road trip. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Host of the Point Forward podcast. I got guests for you today. I got Jim Ozarski. He is in New Orleans getting ready to take in the Bucks Pelicans. Pelicans, one of the best teams in the West. That'll be taking place Monday night. Lori Nickel is in studio with me, and we got to talk about this first place team. And we're going to start with what's going to happen Monday night, because the Bucks are getting, I mean, I would say a key piece back. It's going to be the debut, though, Bucks debut for Joe Ingles, the free agent signing from the Utah Jazz, the veteran shooter slash floor stretcher. He's going to be a guy that they add into the equation coming off an ACL tear last year. In January, he tore it. He had surgery in February. And now, 10 months later, he's back and will be making his first appearance as a Milwaukee Buck. Jim, I am going to start with you. You wrote about Joe Ingles. There's a huge thing at jsonline.com. Give me a sense of what you think his addition means to this team and how things are going to change with Joe Ingles in the equation.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the basketball, right? And simply, and I guess he's a 6'8 ball handler who can shoot threes, and if that sounds familiar, it's because Chris Middleton's a 6'8 ball handler, can shoot threes, run two-man pick and roll with Giannis. Unfortunately, Chris Middleton's now been out a couple games with right knee soreness. But Ingles, that's, you know, there's the three-point shooting, which is clear, obvious, right? That's all-time leader in Utah for made threes. That's sort of his calling card. But what, you know, his teammates have said, and Grayson Allen, George Hill, who have played with him in Utah, have talked a lot about, his passing and his ability to initiate offense. And the fact that, you know, he ran a pretty, he considered it elite, but a pretty good pick and roll game with Rudy Gobert in terms of just finding, you know, that big guy run into the rim and throwing lobs, things of that nature. So, and George Hill says he's an underrated defender. Now we'll see with the knee, right? Like, can he get, is he all the way back? You know, a new knee at 35 is like, you know, can he move like a 30-year-old again? I don't know. But I think that's this sort of what he'll bring. So, yes, shooting. But I think for the Bucks, it's a lot of that two-man game. Take some of the pressure off Drew, Chris, when he plays, etc. And another, you know, floor spacer for Giannis.
Coach Mike Budenholzer had some very complimentary things to say about Ingles after the game. Or before the game, I don't remember, against the Jazz on Saturday, and talked about how he sort of forged this relationship with the players without having to be on the floor, and how rare that is, that usually you have to play to be an impact person. But his personality has shown through as a, you know, kind of a trash talker, kind of an edgy guy. Edgy is probably the wrong word. Just somebody who can mix it up and push guys and challenge guys and have a lot of fun. And, you know, that is hard to do when you're not contributing, and especially with a guy who has not played for the Milwaukee Bucks before. So that's an interesting thing. Lori, what do you know about Joe Ingles? Like, do you have any sense of what he is off the court or anything like that? Like, what is sort of your relationship to what he can do?
The only thing that I noticed as well is that he's been friendly in the locker room to absolutely everybody, including, you know, making eye contact with reporters he doesn't know. So that effervescent personality is definitely coming through, and everything else I'm learning about him is from reading Jim's story right now.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
We should all read it.
We will definitely, we're going to spend some time on Australian things. Just you guys wait. I got something planned for a little later in this podcast, but, yes, so native Australian Joe Ingles is going to be in the mix here, starting against the Pelicans. This is a rugged road trip, and I did mention that the Bucks do now, in fact, have the best record by percentage points over Boston in the NBA. Only 8 losses. They're the only team in the NBA with only 8 losses, but they're probably going to get a couple on this trip. It starts obviously with this. Brooklyn's on the trip. They'll be closing it down in Chicago. There's a lot here. Lori, the Bucks are in such good shape. Like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they could actually go 0-5 on this trip, and it wouldn't really move the needle. Everyone would panic, of course. We would panic because we should. I don't think the Bucks are not hurting right now. So give me your status report. What sort of you know, if you have any thoughts on what to look forward here to with the team being gone now through the first part of the holiday season, what are your expectations here?
I think given how poorly they played, was it at Memphis Thursday night? That's now finally a red flag for me. And here's why. The Bucks have shooting problems. It's not a phase. It's not a beginning of the season thing. It's something that's becoming a developing characteristic. But they're really shooting poorly on the road. Overall, they rank 22nd in field goal percentage at 45.9%. And they're 30th, though, in field goal percentage while shooting on the road. They're only shooting 42.3% on the road, and the Bucks guards are only hovering around 43%. So this is something they need to figure out why that is and what's going on. And, you know, I don't know, Jim, how much they're getting in those morning shoot-arounds on the road. It's still early enough in the season that they maybe don't have to rest. But to me, that would be the number one formula, is to get on the gym. And, you know, that's something that's got to be ironed out, because they've had a really nice, cushy home stretch here for quite a while, which is, has helped with this great record.
What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, they do. I mean, especially on the road, I don't know if they haven't had a shoot around other than their back-to-backs. Or I believe in Houston, they had an early tip. So generally, they don't shoot around when, you know, they got to get to the arena so much earlier. But, you know, you're right, Lori. I don't know what to make of those woes. And that's what they are, hashtag woes. you've got guys who you have a long enough track record where you're like, okay, well, there's there should be a progression to the mean. But like George Hill, this is now 2 years in a row where this is not going great. You know, Wesley Matthews started like gangbusters when he re-signed in December of last year, but that hasn't really come back. Bobby Portis is I think, in an adjustment year. He's not a 31% three-point shooter. Maybe he's not the 41% we saw a couple years ago, but I think he's adjusting to the fact that now teams are treating him like a $50 million player, that he's just not going to be able to just stand out there and shoot wide open three. So I think there's some of that as well. And you know, even Giannis, for as great as he's been, has had his shooting struggle. So I don't know, Lori, if there's – you can't make it go in, but you'd think at some point – it's got to get better, but also, though, will it? So maybe that's where, again, go back to Joe Ingles. They need him to not be the guy who made only 34% of his threes last year. They need him to be the guy that makes 40, like, soon, you know? and obviously hope Pat Connaughton irons things out as he gets into games 14, you know, through 20 here in the next week.
I wanted to add something to that, too, if I could. Offensive rebounding, how much does that play a factor? Now, of course, you only get an offensive rebound if you miss the first shot. But Bobby right. Portis has talked about how much he's getting blocked out on offensive boards, even double teamed. And this is a guy who kind of saved the season last year when Brooke was out and hurt for so long. Now he's, like you said, he's finding that extra attention. And while you have to miss something to get that first miss to get the offensive board, it seems like they're not getting as many opportunities. I haven't broken down the stats with that, have you? But I know that's an emphasis, that they want to get more offensive rebounding, and that seems to be hit or miss with even just the last week's games of whether they've capitalized on that or not.
Yeah, it's the scoring isn't there, Lori. Like, they're a top 10 team in offensive rebounding. I don't know if in their view that's good enough. You know, they're eighth right now. I don't know the trend line offhand, you know, if they were fifth, for instance, and now that's gotten worse. But you're right. I mean, look, Bobby Portis and Giannis are double-double machines. I mean, I think they're right next to each other in the top four or five in terms of individuals, like as total rebounders. You're right. Like, it's the Portis thing is so interesting because the league is reacting to him in a way that I mean, I'm sure he expected it, but it's so interesting, Lori, that he's just not – no one's giving him anything now, and yet he's still averaging a double-double, which is a huge credit to him. But, you're right. It is an emphasis. I just don't think they're making even the second shot a lot of times on that, you know? And
totally.
Yeah, that's – again, will that change? I don't know.
It will.
But it's
definitely worth monitoring. Been streaky, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Portis, like you said, top five in double doubles. He's the only guy who typically comes off the bench among those guys. He had another one on Saturday against the Jazz. Set the tone. 15 points in the first quarter. Really got the Bucks off on the right foot. And then in the fourth quarter, the Bucks held the Jazz to 14 points, pulled away for a 123-97 win. Portis, one of the stars of that one. And the Bucks rebounding extremely well in that game, actually. And that was without Giannis and Chris Middleton both on the bench. I wanted to rewind a little bit before going forward, because I do want to talk about that Celtics game that's going to be part of this road trip on Christmas Day. But the Bucks did beat the Warriors, got Golden State maybe at a good time with Steph Curry possibly hurting a little bit. And Curry now is going to be out for a little while. Bucks win 128-111 before that game that Laurie alluded to in Memphis, a blowout 142-101 loss. Worst loss of the year, kind of a burn the tape situation, I think, for the Milwaukee Bucks. But Giannis going out on Saturday against the Jazz. Now, Chris Middleton and Giannis both had knee soreness. You read between the lines, Middleton's could be real enough to maybe hold him out for another couple games. Hard to tell what the timetable would be. Could very well play Monday night, but could be out for a little bit longer. Giannis seems like it's probably just a rest situation. And I wanted to ask you guys about this because this is something a lot of fans talk about when Giannis takes days off, when he does rest. I mean, obviously, I think everyone understands in a macro sense, you have to give him those opportunities, especially if he does have any history of injury or even like light soreness. You gotta iron that out. This team is going to the playoffs. They're probably going to be a top four seed. Even if they're not, they're a threat to win the title. So you take those opportunities. It's not like Giannis has sat out a lot. He's only sat out, I think that was the fifth game of the year. And the others were clustered together. So at a time when he probably was ailing. So it's not like he's just, you know, load managing his way through the season. It's not a Kawhi Leonard situation. He's often playing. And then again, you know, it's a home game. It's the last home game for a long time. Christmas season. They did the whole Christmas spectacle. The Bucks aren't going to be back again until the 30th against the Timberwolves. So it does. It's easy to be like, why is this the game he's sitting out? But I don't know how they would go about choosing that particular date. I don't know if there is a method to that madness. If there are any signs that really the Bucks follow, other than hey, my knee hurts a little more than it did yesterday. But what do you think about that, Jim? Because you do get a lot of pushback from fans like, you know, we this was a Christmas gift and it was a home game. And, you know, it's the one time, you know, you get a chance to see Giannis and he's not available. And, you know, why not one of these road games? I don't know. I sort of understand the bigger picture, too. But what guidelines should teams be operating on, if any at all? How do you look at that?
Yeah, it's a never ending problem for the NBA, which is why I think the commissioner is going to kind of jam through the midseason tournament, you know, whatever that's going to be. That's why they have this play-in tournament. They're trying to get these guys to play more games, just in general. Because you're right, like and it's that balance, right? Where it's like, well, if a player says they're hurting, how do you, like, there's no way to know that, like, unless it's a rupture of something or broken, right? Like, so if it's just, I'm sore, I feel something, and that's, and Laurie knows this. I mean, nobody's healthy. These guys, like, it's a constant level of pain. We talk about this with Brook Lopez in his back. Like, how long was that man playing and dealing with whatever, like that herniated disc, right? Like, that's just, they have pain. And so it does, you know, affect fan bases in that way. But I guess, like, if you were to tell the Bucks fan who their one game they went to, none of the players played, but then down the line they get to enjoy a championship run, like, I don't, like, is there a trade off there, or as a fan you're like, no, I don't care, like, I don't care about watching a championship on television. Like, we spent, you know, $700 for the family to go to a game, and no offense to AJ Green, but I didn't pay that to see AJ Green. You know, so I don't know. Like, it's the never ending back and forth with the NBA and fans. Like, with Giannis, his history of knees is well documented. So I don't think, you know, I think when he feels something, he says it. And the team is always going to defer to that. Meaning, like, Giannis could, Laurie knows this, Giannis could be sitting up there with, you know, a railroad spike through his shoulder and be like, nah, I'm fine. I'm good. Like, he'll never say anything to us. But if he says something to the training staff, I think that just sends up the, okay, all right, we need to see what's going on. How does he feel? What's the process there? That, you know, him in particular. And then I think Chris fits in that boat, Drew, you know, down the line in that way.
Well, you were at the game, JR, Saturday. See, I don't even think Giannis might even say anything to the trainers at this point. I think somebody would have to look at either some knee swelling or some performance issues, or somebody might actually have to intervene on Giannis's part with something like that. Chris is a different story, but I still think Giannis is more on the stubborn side than he is on the mature look, like long picture career thing. But I thought it was also interesting. A lot of guys, excuse me, like, we're, first of all sick in Wisconsin. This is awesome. It's like the 14th cold I've had, and they've all had. And I'm not complaining. But the guys were doing George Hill's charity thing on Friday, too. And that's awesome. I think that it's wonderful when the players do that, and they should do that. But that's also going to affect some downtime or some,
sure,
you know, recovery time, some leg elevation time, some treatment, you know. So, that's a factor. But what did you see on Saturday when you were there? Was Giannis being goofy and on the bench and doing his normal thing? Because I think resting him once every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever you want to call it, I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, pretty reserved, actually. It wasn't maybe the normal, you know, he and Chris Middleton just sitting on the bench, hanging out. And obviously the Bucks, you know, they're kicking 8-2. Like, they got to sit their guys and then also played an extremely competitive game and then won. They beat a team that was above 500 that just beat the Pelicans in back-to-back games and just played a complete defensive performance. So obviously it works out. Like, there's no, the only losers here are the people who, you know, saved all their money for this one game. And, you know, you're going to sit them in some game. Somebody is going to be upset, whether it's the fans on the road who travel to see Giannis or the home fans. Like, it doesn't matter. There will be times that they have to pick. I just didn't know if there's any rubric. If they even take into account, well, it's a home game. You know, let's sit them on road games. Let's sit them in Charlotte. You know, but they don't. I don't think they do.
No, and they can't. They can't judge. This isn't entertainment or performance. This isn't a Broadway show to them. This is like a marathon. This is an Ironman to get, even more than a marathon, to get to April and May. And if I'm glad, you know, the coaching staff, the training staff, the medical staff, the players, they can't consider that. This is all the NBA's fault. There should be 70 games a year, and there should be a truncated early playoff thing. I don't need to see 4-0 streaks, you know, Bucks against Bulls in April or whatever, you know, Detroit in 2019 when they swept them. There should be shorter. It should be a lot more like baseball where, you know, the first parts of the playoffs should be shorter, and there should be 70 game seasons. And instead, you're having these elite athletes play at this high performance level, lots of travel, all this stress. So I applaud all the teams that buck that trend and play their younger guys, like Marjan Beauchamp, who had another great game. That's what we need to see. So, and for those poor fans who fork over all that money, my huge amount of empathy for that. I was that kid at 16 years old. All I wanted was a Bucks Celtics ticket for my 16th birthday, and that's all I got. I went to that game alone. That's all we could afford. I totally get that. It's not lost on me, but you are taking a gamble and a risk as a fan if you are buying any ticket to any sporting event anywhere. That's just the risk that you take.
Did the Bucks beat the Celtics? When you were there?
I was a Celtics fan.
Oh, no, Lord.
Yes, I was. Okay, I was the worst player on my team. So they said, watch Larry Bird so you learn something. So that's what I did. And the Celtics did win.
Some great matchups there with Bird, McHale, Parrish, and those Bucks teams. Jim, did you want to say anything? Because Laurie mentioned Marjan Beauchamp, and I wanted to ask about him. But did you want to say something real quick?
Yeah, I was just going back to there is no rubric. JR, like you mentioned the home games and whatnot. I think it was last year. It had to have been after the pandemic. Maybe it was, it had to have been last season. They had like a weird set of back-to-backs at home where basically the home games were the bench games. Mm-hmm. And those were the only games in a month for five, like literally fans in Milwaukee had not seen the Big Three in like a month. Or something crazy like that. So, yeah, it has nothing to do with home and road at all. And who knows? Maybe that's something Adam Silver addresses down the line where it's like, look, guys, if you're going to plan these things out and you don't want your guys playing back-to-backs, which we understand, or 2 and 3, then maybe consider things. But they also say it the other way, where, you know, it's kind of like why the Packers never went to London, right? Like it's when there was a 16-game schedule. Like the road teams also sell out or sell more. They have Greek nights. I don't know how many Greek nights I've seen now in the last like 2 years, because it's like that's just what the Bucks bring, even to the road games.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Marjon Beauchamp, you mentioned him, but also I wanted to mention Sandro Mamushkevili, two guys who had an incredible game against the Jazz. And I guess I'm curious where you guys think these guys could end up contributing down the line. Like we've talked about them before. They're obviously, you know, Sandro's on a two-way deal and Marjon is a rookie. These guys are not going to be in crunch time probably at any point during the postseason run or the late stretch or whatever when we get to that part of the season. But they've been showing some stuff. And particularly, I think Sandro, the energy that guy brings, he is just constant. And, you know, he had played for the Herd the night before. You're talking about back-to-backs, which fortunately the NBA has cut down on, but like not for Sandro, because he played for the Herd the night before on Friday, scored 26 points, and then came in to the NBA game on Friday, and he didn't do any scoring. He hit one basket, but he had six assists and six rebounds before he had scored a point, got a lot of minutes, and absolutely made an impact. And then Beauchamp, too. I mean, he had 18 points. Really good shot, really good 3-point shot. I think he hit four of seven from distance. Those guys, they look like contributors, and I know they're not going to be. You know, I know that for the most part, especially with Joe Ingles back, like I don't know where these guys will get any minutes except in games where people are resting or people are hurt. But the Bucks have some. Their depth is probably even better than I thought. And this is coming at a time when guys like Pat Connaughton have not found it just yet. And you mentioned Bobby Portis isn't shooting it as well, although he's been a force. But you know, George Hill, there are guys who maybe like haven't been complete contributors, and then they've got these guys kind of filling the gap. So I'd be curious where you think these guys end up as the year goes on, and if maybe they find their way into some big crunch time moments as the season goes down. What do you think, Lori?
Hold on.
Yeah.
So I call him Sandro because I'm such a wimp. How do you pronounce his last name? You crushed it.
Oh, I said Mamushkevili, but I don't know. Jim, am I close? I think I'm pretty close.
You're close. You missed the K. So it's Mamukelashvili.
Mamukelashvili. Okay. Sounds good.
I'm going to practice that at home. I call him that because that's what Drew calls him that. And, you know, if Drew Holiday loves this guy, we're all going to love this guy, right? Like, to me, that was the test. And I really enjoy watching that energy, too. And this seems like the kind of lineup where you're going to have to force the issue. You're going to have to play you know, your way onto the rotation. I think Beauchamp has a really good shot at that. I really do. You talk to him for like a grand total of 3.5 minutes post game on Saturday, but it was interesting that he mentioned he's already been working on that 3-point shot and leaning forward a little bit into the 3-point shot so it's not short. That's good stuff from a young guy, and we're already seeing some big breakout games from him. So I think he might have a better shot at getting some meaningful minutes when it, you know, comes down the stretch. Sandro, I'm just enjoying watching right now. I don't really know as much about him except that he's, you know, he gets validated from Drew. So that's good for me.
What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, yes. You know, he's definitely an important part of the 82-game season. I think two-way players can only play a max of 50 games.
And can they play in the playoffs? I don't think they can, right? Or am I wrong about that?
That's a great question. I don't recall. They might be able to.
Sure. But yes, 50 games is the cap.
But yeah, look, Sandro and AJ Green, look, they won that game in Orlando because of those guys. Mm. Or in a large part because of them. I think 20-something points. You know, Marjon Beauchamp helped them. Like, he started games in that 9-game winning streak to start the year, you know, double overtime game in Oklahoma City, you know, and when this thing shakes out, Giannis is going to miss a dozen games. Obviously, Chris has already been out a bunch. Drew Holiday's on his way to missing a dozen games or so. Like, if these guys can get you through that and win along the way. Of course, John Horst and Mike Budenholzer are going to say, we expect it. But you can't expect the 17th guy to help you win. And Marjon Beauchamp, yeah, he's a rookie. He's a first rounder. He's not going to play. I mean, he's not going to play this year. You know, the only reason he does play is because there's injuries, multiple injuries, or games like this where he needs a fit. And it's just so he's gotten way more development, I think, than anybody would have thought. And will he play in the playoffs? That's tough. Beauchamp has a better chance just because his length, his athleticism, the fact he can defend.
Yeah.
At a high NBA level, I think we've seen that in flashes. But it's fun, you know, like he's not Giannis, but they do bring some fun and some energy. And, you know, on those back to backs on those games, like wins are wins. They matter. They matter just as much now as they do in April, March and April, when, you know, the seeding talk really ramps up, because a lot of times that seeding has been determined because of wins and losses in December, January, February.
Yeah, and two-way players are in fact ineligible unless their contract gets converted, which I wouldn't rule out. I mean, for Sandro, he's a draft pick. This is his second year on a two-way, and if they find no veteran that they feel like really ups things when the you know, when you get down to the last part of the season, maybe that happens somehow. I'm not sure, but yeah, it was a good performance from them, and absolutely, like you said, I mean, after that loss in Memphis, I got to admit, I was looking up when's the last time the Bucks lost two games back to back by 20 points. Or more, because they didn't have Giannis. I knew they weren't going to have Chris, and I kind of felt like they weren't going to have Giannis. So I started looking that up, and it's like, oh man, you got to go back to like 2013 and Giannis's rookie year. I thought, oh, this would be such an interesting nugget. And then they didn't even they trailed by 2 points. Like, that was the worst it got against the Jazz. That's just you know, there was a little bit of trying to predict the NBA, but the Bucks just showed up. They just did. You know, Lori, you said that you were talking to Grayson Allen, and maybe this is part of the reason why they're able to show up without Giannis and Chris.
Totally.
That Brook Lopez is such a difference maker. I mean, we've talked about Brook Lopez as a difference maker. That is not a secret. But I, you know, again, there might be some, you know, just underestimating what he brings to the table. He's so I refer to him as a glacier. Like he moves so slowly, but he is inevitable.
What?
He is inevitable. He is going to. Oh my gosh, it's like watching slow motion, but it's beautiful in a way. It is beautiful. I am not disparaging. Look, he moves way faster than me. But the touch he has, the way he is able to just impose his will, even though he's not flashy quick. He's just gonna like roll in there, and he's gonna do his thing, and he's gonna score, and he's gonna get rebounds and hit shots, and it's crazy. So and obviously on the defensive end, you saw three blocks in that first quarter on Saturday. So what did Grayson have to say? Because I thought that was interesting.
It was. So I talked to Grayson after the Bucks beat the Warriors and the 7 technical game and the very bizarre game. That was actually a big game, I thought, for the Bucks last Tuesday. And I thought maybe guard play had some factor into it, because the Warriors were shooting pretty poorly. A couple of guys were 6 of 19, that sort of thing. So I go up to Grayson and I say, what do you think of this? And he's like, yeah, you know, the guards had a meeting. We talked, you know, or talked about it on the side and, you know, the side court and discussed things. He's like, but really, I keep saying this over and over. It all comes down to Brook Lopez. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, Golden State kept complaining, looking for fouls, because they keep having to either shoot over him or around him. And when they couldn't do it, they got frustrated. And it was visible within the end of the first quarter when some of those technicals were already being called. We've known this since Brooke has been playing in Milwaukee, that there's a funneling system, that there's a defensive priority and strategy, right, Jim, where the guards kind of do their part and they fight through the screens and the pick and roll because they don't want to give up any open threes. And they can do that with confidence, as Grayson pointed out, just knowing that Brook is behind them. And he alters so many shots. He talks to his guards so frequently. Giannis said he tunes it out. He doesn't even listen to Brook talking, but Brook is constantly directing traffic and working things out with his guards in front of him so that he can be that stopgap, that goalie, you know, there in the back. And the way they're playing right now, that's how they're winning so many games. Grayson Allen couldn't be complimentary enough, and we kept talking about it for 10 minutes, and he believed it all came down to Brook.
Yeah, it's and that's the thing too. Like, I kind of, not tongue in cheek, I mean, it's true. Like, you're not going to win a bunch of games with AJ Green and Sandro, but they're not playing by themselves. Like, this roster, Grayson Allen is a 40% 3-point shooter, 27 years old. Brooke Lopez is now, I believe, the betting favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year. He's on an All-Star track.
It's amazing.
Bobby Portis has a $50 million contract. Pat Connaughton has a $40 million. Like, these are guys who are paid highly to do what they do. And the thought, I'm sure, is, yes, Giannis, Chris, Drew are the engine. They are the big three. You're going to need them to beat Golden State, Boston, Brooklyn, etc. But these other guys, the other guys, are pretty good too. And I think there is a pride level. I know, especially in that 9-game winning streak when Chris was out, Drew sprained his ankle, Giannis's knee flared up. Like, those guys take a lot of pride in being who they are. And a lot of guys do. It doesn't mean that they're good or that they'll win games together. But to Lori's point, yeah, it's, you know, when you have Brook Lopez playing at that level, who's a guy who's a lottery pick, all-time leading scorer still for the Nets, that kind of, you know, can win a league individual award at this point. Those, like, that's rare. That's hard to do. Has a lot to do with the fact that they've been able to weather all of these injuries and illnesses that they've had.
Exactly. Long overdue, too. I'm cheating, trying to look on my phone. Has Brook ever made All-Star? I don't think he has.
Yeah, he's made one.
Not with the Bucks. So his perspective, you know, he got some mention for Defensive Player of the year Giannis won it. He was supposed to go to the Olympics, by the way. If the Olympics had been in Tokyo in 2020, he and Chris Middleton would have gone. But the pandemic hits, the roster changes, and it ends up being Middleton and Drew who go and win gold. And so Brooke didn't get that. I mean, of all the guys I've covered, he's so private about it. He keeps it to himself. He would never complain about not getting these awards or accolades or anything like that. But I think they do mean something to him. So it's interesting if this is finally his year to kind of bring in the haul. You know, you had mentioned a couple times comeback player of the year, I think, JR, you were thinking, and it's too early for defensive player of the year. It's still to talk about that, but it'll be interesting to see if maybe he gets some recognition for this.
Yeah, after missing so much of last year. Comeback player of the year seems certainly attainable. Jim, I don't know how much longer we have you here, but I do want to ask about this Boston game because, you know, you said it. They've got Brooklyn next on the, you know, coming up on the schedule. They've got Boston after that. Of course, that is going to be on Christmas, 4 o'clock tip time. They play every other day here, and every team is good. But give me your thoughts about just the Boston game. Do you see it as a litmus test for anything? It's going to be the first time these two teams square off. They're obviously the two top teams in the East, and the Cavs are two games back, but it doesn't feel close. It feels like it's Boston, it's Milwaukee, and it's the rest of the East. Are you looking for specific things? Are you looking for specific matchups, or is this just all preamble to what's going to come later?
It's a Christmas Day game. It's a showcase, their first matchup. It shows a little, both teams will be up, assuming health. Okay, let's assume everybody's healthy. Which is hard to do with this Bucks team right now. But if Boston wins at home because they make 35 threes, because that's what they've been doing, like, I don't know. I think if anything, maybe it shows you, okay, well, where do the Bucks need to tighten up some of that 3-point defense, right? Because it has slipped a little bit since the very start of the year when it was so successful. If they win, odds are they prevented such threes, you know? So, and someone gave Jason Tatum fits defensively. And that's, I think, what'll be interesting to see, especially if Joe Ingles is going to be two games. Maybe they give him a day off or rest on that knee, you know, but, you know, he'll be able to play 15, 20 minutes, something like that. So, it's a big one. I think it is, as regular season games go. I'll say, JR, though, you know, Cleveland's up ahead. Brooklyn's up ahead. I think as we record this, Brooklyn's won six straight. Kevin Durant scored 26 points in a quarter, which is insane. They've actually calmed down there in Brooklyn. It's about basketball right now, and that's always been the danger with them, is like an opposing team, is if they ever just played basketball, they still have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and that's what they're doing. So I think if the Bucks, JR, somehow win in New Orleans and Brooklyn, or win in Cleveland and Brooklyn, or some version of a 2-1 going into that Boston game, I think win or loss, it's like, okay, you ran a gauntlet of really, really good teams at the top of both conferences on the road. You came out 500. It's like a baseball trip, right? Like, you're like, oh, okay, you did the hard thing without some of your top guys. You're feeling good about it. But yeah, if they kind of peter out here and we see more of that Memphis kind of, you know, like, and they're like 1-3 against these top teams, then you're like, okay, what's missing? And then the trade stuff and roster management stuff kind of starts kicking up, because you're like, wait a minute, you still have to win on the road in the playoffs. And these are teams you're going to see in those situations.
All right, Jim, I think we got, if I'm right, we got to let you go off to cover this Bucks Pelicans game. But thanks for joining us, man. I've still got one thing for Lori, so
So
you'll have to listen back.
No, stay, Jim. Jim, don't you have a minute? Stay.
Yeah, it is the joys of potting on the road. You never know where you have to run to and get to. But thank you both, and thanks to our listeners. Talk to you soon.
All right, we'll send Jim away. Again, you can find everything he has at jsonline.com. Lori, we usually do these segments, these sort of featurey segments at the end. So I'm gonna debut a new one that I don't know if I'll bring it back, but for the time being, in honor of Joe Ingles coming back to the league, I'm calling this segment "What'd You Say." So maybe this will be like a. Like when there's interesting quotes or something, but Joe Ingles, native Australian. So I consulted CNN.com and ran it by our friend Kane Pittman, former Bucks reporter from Australia, to get some Australian lingo.
Darn it!
And I wanted to see if
can
you,
I
Lori,
swear? Could you say, okay? No.
You could swear. I'm gonna bleep you out, but you can do it. I'm gonna give you a phrase or a word, and I want to see if you know what that means in sort of Australian lingo.
Oh no!
So we're gonna start with an easy one. There won't be many of these. Don't worry. We'll start with a rip snorter. Do you know, Lori Nicol, what a rip snorter is? If you're an Australian, someone says that's a rip snorter. What do you think they're referring to?
Is that when the soccer players or the rugby players cleanse their nostrils without tissue and it's disgusting, and cyclists do it too?
No, that is something else. Which I gotta look that up it's now. I have the rocking. Link. Some there is a term for that. That made the CNN list. So I'm gonna look that up on the Australian.
So
line.
I can't ask Kane. He
well, you can ask Kane, but this is a podcast. We're recording. He's not here. I don't know how you're going to do that.
Darn it.
I mean, you could send him a DM.
Idea.
Okay, so a rip snorter is when like a competition is just really good, really high scoring, really exciting. It's just
so this Bucks Celtics game. We're not calling it a rip snorter. You can't put that in. Copy. No.
You probably cannot, but but you could try. I mean, maybe you're quoting Joe Ingles. So, like, if it's a high scoring 131-130 game, that is a rip snorter, and you can absolutely ask him how he feels about that. Okay, in Australia, if you hit the frog and toad, what are you doing?
Oh my gosh!
If you hit the frog and toad,
and Joe Ingles would know what this is.
Well,
for sure.
I can't say for certain, but I would assume so. This has been verified with Kane Pittman.
Oh,
so. Very trustworthy source.
Absolutely no idea.
All right, that is it. That is you hitting the road. Hitting the road, just, getting going.
What?
You hit the frog and toad. That's right. All right, if I am referring to, by the way, CNN said there was another expression that referred to something similar, like to just get up and get out of here. Do the Harry is another expression. Kane could not verify that. He had never heard that before.
Yeah, then it's not valid. If Kane says
not valid.
It, no, it's no good.
No.
Kane
I mean,
knows.
I do trust him. I do trust CNN, but I trust Kane. I trust Kane
for
more.
For sure.
All right, if I am talking about pineapple, lobster, or gray nurse, those are all terms for what?
Gray nurse?
Gray nurse.
Beer.
Oh, that's a really good guess. Really
for
good.
Australia.
It's terms for money. So it has to do with the different. Well, it has to
not
do with
on
the,
TikTok.
The different bills
saying.
Are various colors. There's yellow. There's red. And then there's a gray, which gray nurse is a type of shark. So these are slang terms for the various money. So if I loan you a pineapple, it's just a bill that is the yellow kind. I don't even know which denomination it is. I should know that. I think pineapple is one of the lower end ones. I'm not sure. Last one, Lori.
Thank
if
God.
What is a cooey? COOEE, cooey.
It's that bird, isn't it? It's not kiwi.
No, that's
New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Cooey. It's the bird. What is it? What would Joe Ingles say? It was. I have no idea.
It's an indication of where you are. So it's like if you're not within a cooey of something, like you're not within a stone's throw, or you're in the middle of nowhere. If you're not within a cooey of anything,
oh my
It's just an indication of where you are.
I thought Joe Ingles spoke English. I didn't know.
Well, he does speak English, but it's just slang. It's just Australian slang. So you can now, Lori, when you talk to Joe Ingles, you can talk about these things. You can throw in cooey into casual expression, or you know, like, hey, you're a rich basketball player. Can you loan me a lobster, a gray nurse? And he'll know exactly what you're talking about. No. See how beneficial this podcast is for you. All right, a little bit of fun at the end, but the Bucks, serious business. They have a huge, huge, huge week ahead. You got the Pelicans on Monday, Wednesday, every other day, right through Christmas. You got Wednesday in Cleveland against the team that's right behind them in the standings. Then they're in Brooklyn against the team that everyone is always watching, no matter where they are in the standings. That's a Friday night game, and then again Sunday afternoon. That's Christmas Day. You can open your presents. You can watch some sports. Bucks Celtics. They'll be on at 4 o'clock Monday, or I should say Wednesday after Christmas, the 28th, there in Chicago, and then back home Friday the 30th and New Year's Day against the Washington Wizards. I cannot promise that we will have a Point Forward podcast next week between the holidays here. We'll try. We'll try,
yes,
Lori.
Yes, we're going to.
All right.
Yes.
Sounds good. If you promise,
promise,
we can maybe work it out. It'll be a little tricky, but we will see what we can do and get that out to you again on either late Monday or Tuesday morning. Any last thoughts, Lori, before we head away?
No, thank you. Okay. Get me out of here.
Once again, find everything that Jim and Lori have at jsonline.com. Lots of great stuff up there covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks for tuning into the Point Forward podcast. We will be back with you again next week. Maybe. Probably. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.